Welcome back to My Seminary Life. I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And listeners, I have great news for all of you. School's out. School is officially out for summer. This is coming out Memorial Day weekend, which is like the unofficial start to summer, regardless. And I think by this point, most people are done with school who are in school. My guest today is done with school as we are recording it, just finished up pretty recently. Amen. Everyone's happy. I've got, you know, seniors in our church's youth group graduating. One of my brothers-in-law, Joe, who was on the show back during the Ancient Greece series. He just graduated over the weekend. So it's a good time. And that's what we're here for today. Just having a good time as we review. We're going to run it back today as we review 300 Rise of an Empire. And I'm running it back today with the guy who was on the episode last year to talk about just plain old 300, Christian Ashley. Christian, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Brandon. Glad to be back for another really fun movie.
That's for sure. For those of you who missed it back during the early fall, I've alluded to it now already. We did a series on ancient Greece, looking at how the height of the Greek Empire, how it has influenced our understanding of religion, politics, philosophy, our political system. And during that series, Christian and I sat down to talk about one of the biggest obsessions we had during the early 2000s, and that was the Spartans in light of the film and graphic novel by the same number, 300. Y'all liked it. Y'all liked that episode, whether it was listening to it on the podcast or watching it here on YouTube. It's one of the more viewed videos we have here on YouTube. So I thought, of course, we have to talk about the sequel that came out 8 years later. So Christian, let's start the same way we did last time. 300 came out in 2006. Rise of an Empire, 2014. What were you up to in 2014 when this came out?
2014 was 1 year after graduating from college. So I was still in Wilmington, North Carolina at that point, trying and failing utterly to find a job in my field. Imagine that, getting a degree and not getting the job you want in it.
What?
So, I know, right? Even after being promised, that's exactly what you go to school for. You'll get the degree. It's a guarantee.
It's a guarantee. So many millennials fell for that, too. We all fell for it.
Line and sinker. Like a fool.
So
I was still in Wilmington, like I said, working at Chick-fil-A and just being beaten by the mediocrity of that life. It's a great company. I love the company, but it wasn't where I wanted to be. I was in the midst of, I think it's a year after that. I need a secretary to keep my dates correct for me. But that's when I figured out that I was depressed for the first time. And so around this time, I was feeling it without understanding it.
Gotcha. Okay. That's a hard place to be in. I've been in that place.
Yeah.
Part of the reason why I ask this question is also because I just love to see the change from when the first movie came out. Because in the first movie came out in 2006, you're like kind of in middle school. I'm barely starting middle school. Now we're in college. You've finished college. I have a year to go still in college. I graduated in 2015. So I think this one came out in the spring of 2014. So I'm like finishing up junior year, getting ready to start senior year in college. And starting finally for the first time in my life to actually address my mental health issues. It won't be too much longer before I'm in counseling for the very first time in my life story. So I feel you a little bit there on the, there's something going on, but I don't quite have a name for what's going on internally right now. Oh, wait, I'm depressed. That is so.
Yep.
And that means also I'm about a year and a half away from, I'm in a job that I don't like and not using my degree. this is not what I signed up for.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of that time it was self-delusion of thinking it's impossible for me, Christian Ashley, to be depressed. Don't you know how great I am? Don't you know how amazing I am? And the exact opposite was true as far as my mental health was taken into account for, because of not getting that job I wanted, not being where I wanted, and all that mess. So I did not watch this film around that time, but it was films like this that did help bring some joy.
A little bit of lightheartedness, you know? Sometimes escapism through film is a good thing. During that time in college, we had, it wasn't every month, but it was just about every month, we had a like stereotypical manly movie night. So that's when I watched movies like Gladiator for the very first time, The Patriot, which is still like one of my favorites, The Last Samurai, which has become my favorite movie. That's when I watched that one as well. Rise of an Empire, I think it may have been like a year later. Like, I think I may have graduated and finally had free time for the first time in a very long time. And I was like, okay, it's time to knock this one out. Did you see this one in theaters, or was this like a way after the fact finally got to it?
Yeah, this was a stage in my life where I wasn't really going out and doing a lot. The only thing I really spent money on was bills and food.
Gotcha.
And the theater was an expenditure that just didn't exist for someone with no, what's the word I'm looking for, disposable income.
There we go.
Because, yeah, even though I was working 40 hours a week at Chick-fil-A, I just wasn't getting enough, you know, support endeavors outside of just keeping myself alive. Mm-hmm. So I didn't end up watching this until about sometime after the pandemic, maybe a year or two.
Oh, okay. So fairly recently then.
Yes.
So I think that that segues pretty well into my next question then, because I watched this one. It had to be like 2015, 2016 is when I finally watched it. It was pretty recent, within the past 4 years that you've watched it. Am I correct in saying this one has not made as much of a pop cultural impact as the first one did? Because honestly, Christian, I don't remember much of this movie.
I watched it to refresh my memory a couple of days ago, and I don't remember much about this movie. So you're in good company. It's a fine sequel. As far as like public awareness is, everyone knows about 300. There may be some people that say, didn't I have a sequel or something? Mm-hmm. That might be about it.
Yeah. Like you said, it's a fine sequel. There's worse sequels out. There are actually worse sequels out there. Ironically, this same year, one of the worst sequels of the MCU came out, Thor: The Dark World. That's still one of my least favorite. Yeah, I'm going to save some more thoughts on the MCU here in a moment, because 2014 is a pretty big year. Outside of that, very bad movie. Although I'm pretty sure Josh likes that one.
I wouldn't be surprised.
He's entitled to one wrong opinion, even when he's not on a podcast.
He's overflowed with his wrong opinions. There's no just wrong opinion.
His cup overfloweth of wrong opinions.
And I've been asking this cup of suffering to be removed from me for this long time. It's yet to be done.
There are worse movies, and by way of sequels, I don't think it really does the standard sequel trope of it's the first one again. It is different, and we got to remember that these are slightly based on historical events, and so I'm sure you can fact check us a little bit through this. This is slightly based on historical events. So like, I guess we're not going to reinvent the wheel too much here storyline wise. I am curious though, do you think that huge gap of time between 2006 and 2014, do you think that played a big factor in this? Cause that's a pretty long time to wait to do a follow-up.
Now that you mention it, that makes a lot of sense to me. Like, you know, how much hype there was for the original movie, and then you wait 8 years for a sequel. It's not doesn't mean you can't do that, but I don't remember there being a lot of people like talking about, yeah, it's going to be coming out soon, or I saw the cool trailer the other day. I might have seen a trailer once on TV at that point in time.
Yeah. Oh, no, actually, I can guarantee I never saw it. I never watched TV in college. And that's not a brag. I just didn't have time for it. So, like, a lot happened. I missed a lot of stuff during that time period. I also am wondering, 2006 is prior to the birth of the MCU. By 2014, I did mention the real stinker that came out that year. But 2014 is also Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and Guardians of the Galaxy. Yes. I think maybe, even though this is a comic book movie, which we'll get to that, I think by this point, we are like full gear into the MCU. Everything else is just hitting by the side.
Yes. Yeah, that sounds right. Because that's actually one movie I did see in theaters. Because friends were going, was Winter Soldier. And there was a ton of hype around that one.
I even saw that one, yeah.
Guardians, I think I got a red box or something like that.
Okay. You did not wait 6 more years after the movie came out before you finally watched Guardians of the Galaxy. That's good.
Not quite.
Or that ride in Epcot may have been a little confusing.
A very fun ride, too.
Oh, that's a good one. I never asked you, what song did you get when you were on that ride? Do you remember?
Oh, gosh, what was it?
I got One Way or Another by Blondie.
I do not remember. I'd have to ask I think my mom was writing it with me. And I'm going again in a month. So maybe I can report back and actually remember this time.
Nice. For those of you who don't know, the ride at the Guardians of the Galaxy ride in Epcot, the song changes every time it rides. I guess there's like 8 songs. Some people have said they have gotten no song before, which I think that's would be very lackluster when you get that first pullback.
No, I mean, it was Conga.
Oh, it was Conga. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Would you pull up the list?
This is what they chose? Yes, I pull up the list. Because my memory is not that good.
Well, you have to hope to get a different one in next month then.
Yes.
Yeah, I think between the gap between the two movies and then also the fact that like we're full MCU by this point, as rough as the second phase ended up being, I think movies like this that were like trying to cash in because it is a comic book movie or kind of they just kind of fell to the wayside because I can remember there being a ton of hype over Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I didn't see it until like 5 years after it came out and it was amazing. Like there was just so many comic book movies that came out during that like 2010s period that I still haven't watched because we were just full gear on MCU by that point.
That makes sense.
So Rise of an Empire was not directed by Zack Snyder. It was written by Zack Snyder. He directed the original, was not directed by the first, or did not direct the second one. The guy who does direct this movie, it's about as forgettable as the movie itself. I cannot remember the guy's name off the top of my head, and he didn't really do anything else besides this movie.
According to Wikipedia, Noam Murrow? N-O-A-M.
Sure. Noam.
Apparently this is whatever Smart People is. And he did a BBC miniseries, Watership Down. Oh, okay. Based off the
movie. I've heard of Watership. And I've heard of Watership Down. I've never seen it, though.
Those are his only 3 credits as director.
Poor guy. Do we know why Snyder didn't direct this one?
I'm trying to think what he would have been doing at this time.
DC?
2014? He probably was doing Man of Steel. Not Man of Steel. That was just after that.
Mm-hmm.
No, Man of Steel was 2013. And Batman vs. Superman was done in 2016.
So maybe he may have been working on
DCEU stuff.
Right. I want to save all the Zack Snyder conversation for the end of the episode, because there's something interesting about this franchise and him. Yes. More conversations about Zack Snyder and a lot more conversations about Frank Miller, definitely check out the first review of 300. I don't know if there's really much else to say about Frank Miller at this point, other than, did you see his cover for the Uncle Scrooge comic coming out next month? Did you miss all of this? Okay, so there's, what's it called? I think it's next month or it's July. Uncle Scrooge and the Infinity Dime is coming out. It's a one-shot, sounds like fun, right? Bunch of variant covers because comics, right? Miller's doing one of the covers, and X blew up over it, saying it's like the worst thing he's ever drawn. And that, I looked at it, I sent it to Pastor Will, both of us are like, you people are just being angry because you want to be angry about something. This, it's fine. Are you looking at it?
Look that bad? Yeah. I mean, I'm not an artist, so I try very hard not to criticize art unless it's like extremely obviously bad. But I see nothing wrong with this.
I don't. I thought the eyes were a little big, but beyond, like a little wide. But beyond that, I was like, it's just calm down. I know people don't like Frank Miller, but we should pick our battles.
He got paid to do a job. He did the job. What more do you want from him?
Right. And a Marvel job at that. He doesn't do a lot of Marvel anymore.
I don't think so. No, I think he's more indie now, isn't he?
Indie and occasionally DC, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, Christian, because you watched it recently, this very forgettable but pleasantly fine action movie.
Yes.
Pleasantly fine. What are we doing here? So 300 ends with the Spartans being defeated at the Battle of Thermopylae. What more is there to do?
Well, there's that whole thing that inspired the Persians to invade in the first place the second time around, which is the Battle of Marathon, where in 490 BC, the Greeks were able to stop the initial invasion. Imagine this, neither Xerxes nor his father Darius were there. So there is no attempt by Themistocles to throw a spear or an arrow or something. I think it's a spear, and actually kill Darius there, because that's not what history says, but it makes for a better movie.
Yeah, it does.
So in the same time, 300 Spartans are at Thermopylae. We've moved on forward in years. The Persians are coming via sea. We have, you want to just go ahead and do the whole film while we're at it?
Yeah.
Okay. So in the beginning, we get Xerxes being there, seeing his father mercilessly killed by this evil Greek, Themistocles. So he goes back home, shaves, gets a bit glamorized, goes in the desert, has some visions, becomes the God King, which is very against their religion, but that's okay because we're messing with things right here in the movie. And he is aided by the mysterious woman known as Artemisia. She even kills other people who would want to work with him, because that means she can get closer to him. She wants revenge because she saw his dad as like a father figure who saved her and rescued her from sexual slavery committed by the Greeks, which is once again nowhere close to the actual history. We'll get there later. She's actually a queen from a Greek-owned city.
Sexual slavery, however, pretty rampant, but that part.
Yes. You can't really avoid that part of history. So she's wanting revenge this whole time. Xerxes wants his revenge, so they're leading the fight. Xerxes attacking the Spartans at Thermopylae, and her fleet going nearby. The Greeks oppose her, led by Themistocles again. Where we get one of the most gratuitous sex scenes in movie history, where in order to convince him to join her side, even though she hates him, let's remember that characterization. So we're going to forget about that for a second. They end up having sex until he says, I'm never going to betray Greece, which you could have said that like 5 seconds earlier.
Right.
And then she lets him leave for whatever reason, because he's an emissary. And apparently they're not going to kill emissaries like Leonidas would kill emissaries. So
in
they
an
have
epic
their battle.
Pit.
Yes. So they had the first naval battle there. The Spartans were all killed. to a man except for Delius, I think is the one who gets to escape.
Yes.
And report back. And the Greek fleet is almost massacred, but he manages to survive in some, what is it, plot convenience, and is rescued back to shore. So because he survives in history, and we're going to care about history right now, but not anywhere else, because he has to be there later in the film, for the Battle of Salamis, where the Greek fleet is able to overpower the far superior numbers of the Persians because of their knowledge of the locale. And earlier, Themistocles had gone to Sparta and talked to Queen Gorgo, who is mourning the loss of Leonidas, and tried to convince her to join him, but in a very unspartan-like fashion, she refuses to join. So that when they seem to be losing after he's actually killed Artemisia, but the rest of the Persian fleet is about to come, the Spartans can come as our big dang hero moment here. You know, the portals are opening up and the Spartan fleet arrives to start taking down the Persians. But we kind of end the film in the midst of that battle. So that the film just kind of ends there.
There's a reason for that. And it's all Discovery's fault, but we'll get there. One thing I love about this movie. So 300, like we said, and most people know, is based off of a graphic novel by Frank Miller, one of his greatest works. Rise of an Empire, which came out in 2014, is based off of the graphic novel by Frank Miller called Xerxes, which came out in 2018. Yep, there it is. What? And if you have to watch the YouTube version. The movie that came out in 2014, I had to fact check. I have not fact checked something so many times for this show. The movie that came out in 2014 is based on something Frank Miller wrote 4 years later. And as far as I can tell, there wasn't some kind of like delay in publishing. It would be one thing if it was like movie 2014, graphic novel 2015, because publishing delays happens a lot in indie comics, unfortunately.
Yes.
But this comes out in 2018 and was the source material for a movie that came out before it. Stop thinking about it. Because time travel in the real world, I guess. Zack Snyder time traveled to 2018 to read it and then came back. It's headcanon now.
That reminds me of one of my favorite jokes from Harvey Birdman. It's when the Jetsons come back in time to sue the past. And they say they come from the far off year of 2002. And Birdman looks at his calendar and it's 2004.
Oh, that's a good one. I've never seen Harvey Birdman like all the way through. I've caught like episodes here and there. Oh, that's such. That's the kind of lowbrow humor.
Yeah, but every now and then it'll get me a good joke like that because it does show appreciation for the Hanna-Barbera cartoons, which I very much prefer. But it's still worth watching.
Yeah,
it's also not 300.
It's also not 300. Also, correct me if I'm wrong. It's Athens, right? It's not Sparta. It is Athens. Athens have, and this is one of the like somewhat historically correct part, Athens had a powerful navy. Maybe not necessarily as powerful as Xerxes' navy should have been. There's a little bit of this like David and Goliath over spiritualization of the situation of the underdog overcoming the big bad boss to, you know, because freedom, again, we talk about more of this in the other episode. But that's one of the historically correct parts of this is that Sparta is defeated at Thermopylae. And even though they take a shot at Athens in the movie, calling them child touchers or whatever it was that they were alluding to, it's actually, according to history and to the comic book that came out 4 years later, it is Athens who actually turns the tide of the war into Greeks' favor later on.
Yes.
Where does it start falling apart from there?
Well, from the very beginning, like I said earlier, neither Xerxes nor Darius were there at the initial fight in Marathon that was led by a different Persian general. Artemisia herself is a real historical figure who was on the Persian side, but mm-hmm. she was the queen of a Greek city in what is now Turkey, because the Greeks had a lot of influence okay. there. And that's one of the reasons for the war is yeah. that Greek-aligned cities in Turkey were being taken over by the Persian Empire. She allies with him. She's actually the queen of Halicarnassus. So there's no like her parents were murdered. She doesn't have a superhero, supervillain origin story there. and in fact, it's kind of weird in that, once again, our major source for this is Herodotus, who, mm-hmm. if you remember from last time, is known by two titles, the father of history and the father of lies.
Yeah.
Father of history, because he's not the first, but one of the highest profile figures we have who started recording things, not only from Greek perspective, mm-hmm. but Persia and Egypt and so on and so forth. But he's also called the father of lies because he just kind of adds stuff. He just kind of, it's whether or not he's naive and just trusts whatever sources he has, or if he just puts stuff in there to like flavor it up for the readership. We're not entirely sure, because he's not exactly around to interview at this correct. Stage in history. So there's that. There's the whole, you know, Themistocles meeting up with Artemisia for this pseudo alliance for him to potentially give up Greece. That scene in Athens where we see the senators and what have you, like fighting each other in the, I don't know, Congress or whatever they call it there.
Yeah.
Would have been a no go completely, because if you threw hands there, you were seen yeah. as like trash. So that's not happening. Oh, the grand old portal scene where the Spartan ships show up at the end. Also not true, because they were part of the original fleet at Salamis.
Yeah.
So there is no grand hero moment. I'm sure there's like 50 other things I'm forgetting, but I think that's enough for right now.
That's enough for right now, for sure. So it sounds like with this one, there are some like historical issues with the first film, but there are some surprisingly like accurate things. Like I saw one classical historian say that 300 is actually a pretty accurate film once you brush away all the martial arts. He called it all the like how the Spartans fight. He called it martial arts. Clearly a guy who's never thrown a punch in his life, but it's fine.
Yes.
Because even things like Even things like the Immortals in the first film, like, yeah, they're dramatized for the movie, but that was actually like the secret security of Xerxes. That was an actual thing. It seems like with this one, we're really going for action movie than we are trying to be remotely historically accurate. Correct?
I would definitely agree with that assessment. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just don't remember. Like I said, nothing really sticks with me with this one. The first one, you got this is Sparta, the kicking scene into the pit. Not real. Yeah, he did kill the embassy in real life, but not real. No weird pit to hell or whatever that was even supposed to be. You have the slow motion fighting sequence that everybody copies. Everybody copies the slow motion fight sequence, that initial one. Even the movie Peabody and Mr. Sherman does that scene. Like, everybody does the scene with the shield, that shield hit that Leonidas does. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, Christian, would this have done better? One, like we said, if it actually came out like within a reasonable time frame after the first one. But two, with all the Navy aspect to this, because there's a good amount of like boat fighting that takes place here. Should we have not have capitalized on Pirates of the Caribbean? If we're going to make a movie that's very nautical fighting, should we not have capitalized off of the time when Pirates of the Caribbean is at its height? You know what I mean?
And that makes perfect sense to me. I mean, just look at the opportunities you have here. Because you're right, there is no, like, moment in this movie compared to the first one. There is no this is Sparta. No. But there, I mean, if you're already going to screw around with history, I mean, why not just do wrong right and commit to the bit? Like, you know, the first film committed to the bit, and that bit was...
Now you sound like Joe. Like it, go on.
300 is testosterone poisoning the movie.
Yes.
Like there's no way around it. So why not do something similar here? Like all good people, all good writers create, great writers steal is kind of like the Adam, the addendum there. So why not take from something like Pirates and have, you know, Themistocles actually being this pirate in disguise or something, or that one random spy that we have is actually this John Sparrow type. Is it Jack Sparrow? Okay. Type? Sorry, not John Sparrow. And like have him have his own private fleet of pirate ships that they don't really get along with the Greeks, but you know, for Greek freedom, which is the reason why the Persians are invading, by the way, because they hate freedom. That is explicitly mentioned at the beginning of the film. But they, the pirates, like their own freedom. And if the Persians take over, they won't have freedom anymore. You could have that in there. There you go, Zack Snyder. There's your second draft.
There's your second draft. By the way, for everybody, just so everyone knows, Persia was actually way more progressive, religiously speaking, because I don't know if you've ever heard of Cyrus, but he told the Jewish people, yeah, go home, worship your gods, just pay your taxes and don't start any fights. And it, history shows that like that was Persia's way of doing things with any like nationality they took over that had a national religion. They just let them they had more religious freedom than Greece did. And when you're on a podcast, when you're on a podcast about that's directed at Christians in America, actually Persia had way more religious freedom than the Greeks did. Greeks also did others.
European. So they're the good guys,
right? They're European. They're more white. They invented democracy, kind of.
And not this random republic democracy hodgepodge we have today.
As no.
People are directly led wrong into thinking that they had that whole direct democracy thing. And then, which is a lot easier to do when you don't have as many people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's way easier to do when it's, I mean, there was a lot of Greek city states, if I remember correct. Like we always talk about Athens and Athens and Sparta, because they were kind of like the two big ones. And I think Crete was another big one. But there was a lot of Greek city states. And even at that, it was still like not trying to run what we have here.
Yeah, there is no such thing as Greece as far as a nation state at this point in time. That doesn't really happen until Alexander comes around and says, yeah, by the way, I own you and we're going to go conquer the rest of the world because I got nothing better to do with my time. And he's pretty good at that.
He is pretty good at that.
But yeah.
Go ahead.
History. Yeah, yeah. You have like Athens have its own sphere of influence. You have Sparta have its own sphere of influence, but not, they may be allied with Athens, but they're not controlled by Athens. They're not controlled by Sparta. The only thing they have is like a racial identity shared between them. There's this idea of being Greek, but there's more of a, having more of an allegiance to your city. And there's like a specific word that they would use that is not coming to my mind right now.
Okay. But it was more about, it's kind of like how Texas operates. They're Texans.
Yes.
It's kind of like Texas, the mentality of all
would be a good way of looking at it.
Yeah. It's like, that's how the Greek city states used to operate. Like, yeah, we're all Greek technically, but I'm from Athens. I'm an Athenian.
Yes.
I'm a Spartan. Gotcha. I can follow that. Does it go too far, Christian, to throw a mythical sea creature into this movie to make it better? Is that going a little too far off of the wall?
Well, they do.
Do they? Is there one? Am I forgetting?
In a dream sequence. It's ambiguous. But there's like these random like serpentine, like sea serpent things that just attack when Themistocles is thrown off the ship. He wakes up underwater, it seems, and he sees them like devouring the people. And he like wakes up right before one can get him. But it's more like a dream sequence than actually being anything from mythology that I recognize. And I love Greek mythology. So
love
sea serpents and cryptozoology. So if there is something out there, you'd think I'd know. Not to say I know everything, but yeah, there's nothing that came to mind.
Okay. I forgot about that dream sequence. Yeah, what were those things? But yeah, do you think that helps if we're just going to throw history out the window a little bit and like, okay, here's a giant. I know the Kraken is Norse, but you know, something like that. The Greeks are going to, the oracles are going to summon a sea creature to help them tire the tide of the war.
Once again, it's like, if you're going to do wrong, do wrong right. Yeah. Commit. Like, history is only there for you to build around this magnificent story you've created that has nothing to do with actual history or the people within. Just do it. Like, you know,
just do it.
You know, Talos, the giant automaton from Greek mythology suddenly shows up on the Persian side. Who's to say that didn't happen? Because we don't care about accuracy here. We want a cool fight scene with a giant robot, essentially. It could have been a mecha fight.
Could have been a mecha fight. Look, Quentin Tarantino's done it at least twice in his movies, and everybody loves him. So, like, yeah, we can mess with this a little bit. Sure, we shot Adolf Hitler to death. That's how that ended.
I mean, sure, yeah. If there's anyone who commits to the bit, it's him.
That's for sure. A little too much. I've never really cared for Tarantino. I've been waiting for my chance to do that systematic ecology episode where I could talk about how I think he's overrated.
Okay. Which one would you like to do? I'll talk to Joshua. We can arrange this right now.
Gentleman's agreement. I mean, the one I think is the most overrated is his most beloved, Pulp Fiction. I think that movie is.
Okay. Oh, man. You and I on opposite sides. This will be fun.
Oh, that'll be different. Now. Okay. Yeah. We'll arrange with Josh. Stay tuned, MSL listeners.
Under the table business dealings. To talk about Pulp Fiction on a 300 podcast on a show on about seminary.
Right. That's how we got here, folks. You mentioned an important name earlier, and that is Alexander the Great. So let's talk about Alexander the Great for a moment. In Zack Snyder's original plan, there was going to be a third movie. 300, Battle of Thermopylae, Rise of an Empire, Athens has a strong navy, and then a third movie that was tentatively being called Blood and Dust, which was going to be about the rise of Alexander the Great. This, however, was one of the roughly bazillion films that Discovery shut down after they merged with Warner Brothers. However, as of last year, 2023, the rights to the film have reverted back to Zack Snyder. So Christian, 10 years after the sequel and almost 20 years after the original, do you want a third 300 showcasing the rise of Alexander the Great?
If it stays stupid, inject that directly into my veins. If he goes woke and goes actually historically accurate, I don't want it. Like, forget about it. That's what going woke is in this sense. Like, please, just yes.
So apparently,
that bloody, gory fight.
Apparently, I haven't read Xerxes, but apparently that is part of the Xerxes graphic novel, is The Rise of Alexander the Great. So it would still be pulling from comic books, although I guess Frank Miller could still write something for the future. That just seems to be how that works. I'm torn on this idea. I want it, but I don't. I don't want it because we all know what this really is. We all know what this could really be. It's not a new movie. It's a requel. And next thing you know, there's spinoffs and TV shows and prequel stuff that happens before the first 300 movie. You nailed it the first time. Do we really have to build everything into a... I'll give you a sec. We really have to build everything into a cinematic universe. I'm just exhausted that everything has to be a cinematic universe now. On the other hand, I do agree with you. Stripped away, if you just came to me and said, Brandon, would you like to watch a movie about Alexander the Great? Sure. Yeah, I'll take that. Why not? Because I think this is what 300 does offer, an alternative. It's not yet another superheroes and multiverse. It's something else. It's kind of historical. It's kind of superhero-y, and it's masculine stupidity. I don't know how else to put it. It's a compliment. Masculine stupidity. What were you going to say?
Yes. Now, if we would do this, if we had this now, the way things are going, we have our MCU branching off of Alexander. This is how you finally get that movie you've always wanted. And I agree.
I was going to bring that up.
The Maccabees.
Mm-hmm. That's
a spinoff way down the road.
That is, because that's not too far off of, or in history, during Hellenization, when Antiochus is ruling as co-regent king, ruling over Jerusalem. This was, for those of you who are like, what is going on here? Back in December, my brother was on the show. We did a special for Hanukkah, because we celebrate Hanukkah. We talked about the Disney Channel original movie, Full Court Miracle. And part of the conversation was the fact that no one has ever made like a serious movie about the Maccabees. And actually, Bradley did pitch Zack Snyder as one of the possible directors. So all of a sudden now, this is like within the realm of possibility. Anything's possible, as one of my uncles used to say. Anything's possible. And I don't hate it for that.
Like, if that's what it takes to get a good Maccabees film, like, sure, I'll endure whatever else comes out.
Yeah. It would also be interesting because, at least from the perspective of the Jewish people, the Greeks are the bad guys. And you have this cinematic universe where the Greeks are the heroes. Like, there's no question about it. As you said, the second one starts with the declaration that Persia hates freedom. Like, it's pretty obvious who the good guys are supposed to be. So it would be interesting how they would handle that topic from the perspective of the Maccabees, who are like, we want our cultural identity back and our religion back. Thank you very much. We're not going to bow the knee to you people.
That's how you do it, though, is you set it up through those spinoff movies that you don't really care for. They'll be the Thor to Dark Worlds of the whole Seleucid cinematic universe. But it shows their degradation of where they stop giving people freedom. So when the Jews start becoming your protagonists, you're already against the Seleucids in that regard, because the last film made them bad guys.
That would also be cool, because instead of tracking with a character or a team like in Marvel, it's more like Greece turns to the dark side. Greece is the main character, not, you know, Leonidas is long dead at this point. Yeah, that would be the interesting thing to see, like, Greece as a people, they are the good guys and now turning to the dark side. What other major Greece events would we need? Some type of showdown between the Romans, right?
Yes.
That would be the finale.
They losing to the Romans. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they didn't really fight Carthage like the Romans did. Yeah.
Capitalize off a civil war, Greece or Sparta versus Athens.
That would be Peloponnesian War, yes. Which, by the way, guess who the Spartans got their fleet from in the Peloponnesian War?
The Persians. The Persians? Love it.
So, and the Spartans actually win that war, but they don't actually take total control of Greece. It's this weird thing, like, they won, but it's a real Pyrrhic victory for them. So that'd be a fun spinoff series. It'd have to be before Alexander, but that's fine.
That's fine. Dave Filoni shoves things wherever he wants in Star Wars at this point. So who cares about doing this in any kind of chronological order? Star Wars has never cared about that.
Yeah. And in some way, I guess this leads to, if we're going with the Maccabees route, we have to start the Bible cinematic universe. We have to show, you know, Paul venturing through Greece at Athens and going down with the scholars there. But we can make it a lot more bloodier than Paul actually did. You know, we've got to get the male audience in there.
Right, gotta bring in the male audience somehow.
Yeah,
he didn't. Paul is like throwing people.
He came with a sword.
Right.
Yeah.
He's Paul's like throwing people through statues. I'll show you what the unknown god.
You're about to meet him.
You're about to meet him. That's like, what's his name? In The Greatest Story Ever Told, he plays John the Baptist. I lost his name. Moses in the Ten Commandments.
Charlton Heston.
Charlton Heston. Thank you. I was going to say Planet of the Apes next. There's one line when the Roman guards come to like arrest John the Baptist, and they say something like, "We're here to bring you the Herod," and he replies, "I'm here to bring you to God." You know, in only a way that Charlton Heston could deliver.
Yes, if we could find a way to resurrect him to do these films for us,
do one of those AI deep fakes.
I just clone him from something, you know.
Clone him from something. That would be good. I'll take a clone Charlton Heston doing movies again. Yeah. So maybe you won me over. There's a possibility. Okay. There is a possibility. I do feel bad. I know we're not supposed to feel bad for Hollywood people, but I do feel bad for Zack Snyder, because he seems to be a guy full of ideas and just no one will get behind him yet. He really hitched his wagon to Warner Brothers, and they really gave him the short end of the stick. He wanted to be the Dave Filoni and what's his face at MCU. He wanted to be that with the DCE. Yeah, Feige. He wanted to be that with the DCEU, and that just executives and fans really got in the way of that. Disney dropped him like a hot potato, because that's what Rebel Moon was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a Star Wars story, and Solo bombed, so they canceled all of those projects. He's got to get something. You got to give him something, because he clearly has a creative mind. Whether you can get into his style or not, he really can like build a universe. Let Snyder build something. What would you let him build? This? Would you let him keep building this?
Yeah, with this monstrous Frankenstein's monster that we've created, yeah, absolutely. I would let him have full reign of that wacky historical, anti-historical set of films.
That's what we got. I can't come up with any other thing I would trust him with at this point. Like, other than his own original ideas, I know at Netflix he's kind of building this Army of the Dead universe. It's fine. I can't get into Dave Bautista as an actor. Anyone who was a wrestler first and then became an actor, I really can't see them as anything but. And that goes for The Rock. That goes for Rock the Dwayne Johnson. John Cena, yeah. Well, John Cena does pretty good as Peacemaker, but basically he's playing a parody of himself at that point. So it's still basically the same thing.
Yes. That helps.
That does help. But yeah, like, because Batista's in, sometimes it works. Batista's in Army of the Dead. I'm just like, he puts those little glasses on. I'm like, what are you doing, Dave? You're the animal. What are you doing? Drax, though, is different, because again, he's kind of just playing like a goofed up version of himself, essentially.
Yes.
Wrestler actors work when it's just a goofed up version of themselves. Hulk Hogan can't act, but Three Ninjas, whatever that one is, when they're like trouble showdown at something mountain, like an amusement park.
Yeah.
And he's like this action hero guy there in yellow and red. They didn't even try. They just wear the colors we all know.
Just bring it from work.
Bring it from work, yeah. Wow, this has been all over the map. Any last thoughts on this ridiculous episode talking about a ridiculous cinematic universe?
I will say, for those more squeamish out there, there is some nudity in here. Obviously, mega violence. If that's something you're not big on, which why are you watching a 300 movie if you don't like mega violence? But we got to the content warning almost at the end of the episode, so there's that. Just shut your brain off. Like, you can still think critically, because I can never, as much as I do shut my brain off, I still think critically watching a film like this. And I know I do that differently, or that's not historically accurate. But at the same time, I'm also like, oh, that guy just murdered that guy. That's pretty cool. Like, just get to that mindset. You'll be fine.
Yeah. I wish people could get to that mindset more. I feel like we could enjoy movies more if we could just shut off our big brains and just enjoy a bad movie. Enjoy a bad movie this weekend. That is my encouragement. What else are you going to do on Memorial Day weekend? Eat a hot dog? I mean, what else do people do on Memorial Day? Turn on just your favorite, shut off your brain film, and just enjoy it. We had a moral somehow at the end of the story.
What better way to use your own freedom?
What better way?
Watching a bad movie.
Been watching a bad movie with the father of lies and Frank Miller writing about it. What else is there to do? Perfection. This is a hot mess of a movie, and this has been a hot mess of an episode. So let's get out of here. Thank you all for surviving. I don't know how else to put it. Thank you all for surviving this episode. Everyone who financially supports the show, which this is going to plummet after this episode, is if you want to do that, you can head on over to buymeacoffee.com/MSLpod. Everyone who supports the show at the $9 a month tier gets a shout out. So thank you, Lori, for supporting the show. As always, you can go into the description of this episode to find links to all the important things. There will also be a link down there to the Anazao Ministries Podcast Network, where I'm at, where Christian is at with Let Nothing Move You and also Systematic Geekology. This episode is being shared to the SG feed. So SG listeners, hello. And if you enjoyed this, we do wacky adventures like this every once in a while, including our summer school series that's coming up here at the end of June, doing a deep dive into 5 different cults. We're going to be talking about cults for 5 days. Christian's going to be back for one of the most complicated. He's told me the name of this cult like a dozen times and it never sticks. It's going to be interesting and way more organized than whatever this episode was. But thank you for sticking in there. Thank you, Christian, for coming on back. Always a pleasure to hang out with you, buddy. This is Brandon signing off. Reminding you, as always, that theology is for everyone. Watch a bad movie this weekend and keep on studying.